Psalm 37, please. Psalm 37. There are 40 verses. We're not going to read it in one hit. We'll read it a section at a time. Psalm 37. I guess we're all familiar with Corrie ten Boom, who, along with her family members, helped many Jews escape the Nazi Holocaust during World War II. They hid prisoners. As a result, when they were caught, she was imprisoned. And if you know the story, she escaped the gas chambers due to a clerical error. We would say God protected her in that situation. And her book, The Hiding Place, describes that ordeal that her and her family went through. And her sister, Betsy, starved to death in a German prisoner of war camp. But Corrie ten Boom, this Dutch Christian, has got many, many wise and wonderful sayings. And here are a few of them. She said, "Worry does not empty tomorrow of its sorrow. It empties today of its strength." She also said, "Never be afraid to trust an unknown future to a known God." On one occasion she said this, "If you look at the world, you'll be distressed. If you look within, you'll be depressed. If you look at God, you'll be at rest." And I think my favourite Corrie Boom saying is this one. "Don't bother to give God instructions, just report for duty." It's good, isn't it? Don't bother giving God instructions, just report for duty. Her own favourite saying was, "Don't wrestle, just nestle. Don't wrestle, just nestle." And if I was given a title to Psalm 37, it would be that. Don't wrestle, just nestle. When we are close to God, nestling in his love, we don't have to wrestle with unresolvable issues. We can simply trust a loving God to do the right thing. David the psalmist will tell his readers again and again in this psalm, do not fret. Don't be envious of wicked people who choose to do wrong even if they seem to be successful. Don't worry about them. Don't fret over them. You just nestle. You rest in the Lord. And that's the theme, the key of this psalm. Now, before we read it, two things by way of introduction. First of all, Psalm 37 is a wisdom psalm, a teaching psalm. And it's hard to give it an outline because it is a string of short, unconnected sentences. It actually reads a bit like the book of Proverbs. It may be because in the Hebrew language, this psalm is an acrostic. That means it follows the letters of the Hebrew alphabet. If it was in English, the first two verses would start with A. And then the next two with B, and then the next two with C, all the way through to Z. In the Hebrew, it starts with Aleph, Beth, Gimel, all the way down to the last Hebrew letter, Tau. Every kind of two lines in English is a stanza, and then it starts with another Hebrew letter. And it's probably been done to help its readers learn it off by heart, as a memory aid. Now, as a preacher, I often use alliteration. If you're a preacher, this is the perfect alliteration. It will fit any sermon, any time you preach it. There was a person, there was a place, and there was a problem. That fits any passage, any text. So you never have to be stuck for a three-point message, okay? A person, a place, and a problem. Why do we do that? Because alliteration are pegs that you hang your thoughts on. Helps people follow the flow and gives them something to remember at the end of it. Well, many of the psalms are written like that, with alliteration or as acrostics to help people learn them off by heart. So first of all, it follows the letters of the Hebrew alphabet. So it doesn't flow. It's just a series of short, sharp, stated sentences, often unconnected. Secondly, if you do have a Bible that has titles above the psalms, all you get is a Psalm of David. It's not very helpful at all. You don't get, sometimes they tell us where these psalms that are attributed to a certain period of time in David's life, or it was written to a certain person, but not here. We're just told it is a psalm of David. But if you scan down to verse 25, There's a few words in verse 25 that just help us appreciate the time period David wrote it. You have those words, now I am old. Now I am old. So David is writing this psalm at the end of his life. He's reflecting over a lifetime of experience. And so he brings to our attention a whole load of statements from experience, not from theory. He ponders, he deliberates, and he writes down for us how God deals with righteous people, those who follow him, who live right, and wicked people, those who are rebellious and will say to God, no thank you, I'm quite happy living life my way, on my terms. And so it is a summary of right living and wrong living. Now let's look at the psalm together. I'm going to divide it up into four headings. Number one, verses 1 to 11, the Lord can be trusted. The Lord can be trusted. Verse 1. Do not fret because of those who are evil, or be envious of those who do wrong. For like the grass, they will soon wither. Like green plants, they will soon die away. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and enjoy safe pasture. Take delight in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust in him, and he will do this. He will make your righteous reward shine like the dawn, your vindication like the noonday sun. Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret when people succeed in their ways, when they carry out their wicked schemes. Refrain from anger and turn from wrath. Do not fret. It leads only to evil. For those who are evil will be destroyed. But those whose hope is in the Lord will inherit the land. A little while, and the wicked will be no more. Though you look for them, they will not be found. But the meek will inherit the land and enjoy peace and prosperity. In this first section, these first 11 verses, David gives one negative instruction and four positive instructions. One negative, four positive. The negative one he repeats three times. It's there in verse 1, verse 7 and verse 8. Don't fret. Don't fret. It literally means don't get burnt up. Don't get heated up. Don't get hot under the collar, we would say. David's message is simple. Hey, chill out. Be cool. Relax. Don't become anxious by what you see. So that's the negative instruction. And then he gives four positive instructions. Verse 3, trust in the Lord. Verse 4, delight in the Lord. Verse 5 to 6, commit yourself to the Lord. And then verse 7, rest in the Lord. Verse 3, trust. Verse 4, delight. Verse 5 and 6, commit. Verse 7, rest. Psalm 37 was David Livingstone's favourite psalm. And on one occasion, when he was a young missionary, when he first started his great explorations across Africa, he encountered a chief who wouldn't let him cross a particular region of territory. And David Livingstone tried to negotiate his way across the land, but the chief was having none of it. You can't cross. Go away. Go back to where you come from. We don't want you here. And after a few days of frustration, David Livingstone pulled out a pistol from his holster, pointed it at the chief and said, I am crossing. And the chief, realising the danger he was in, said, well, you better go. But for the rest of his life, he regretted having used that means to get across that territory. Especially as this was his favourite psalm and verse 5 was the verse he built his whole life upon. In the NIV it reads, commit your way to the Lord, trust in him and he will do this. The King James Bible says, commit thy way into the Lord, trust also in him and he shall bring it to pass. But he hadn't waited. He hadn't trusted for the Lord to bring it to pass. He'd used a revolver to open up the way. And like I say, for the rest of his life he regretted that incident. Later on in life he gave a friend a Bible. And he inscribed it with this verse from this psalm. He wrote it in two languages. The Sukuna language. And then he translated it into English. And also later on in life, he regretted the fact he hadn't been able to spend time with his children. He was in Africa, exploring, being a missionary. His family were back home. And when his son was growing up, after their mother died, he wrote these words to his son Thomas. Whatever you feel yourself best fitted for, one ought to endeavour to devote the peculiarities of his nature to his Redeemer's service. And then he quotes verse 5 of Psalm 37. And one more illustration of how important it was to him. During his final days, he had been menaced by savage tribesmen, prostrated by fear, gnawed by hunger, and near to death. But he kept quoting verse 5, "Commit thy way into the Lord. Trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass." And that was the verse that sustained him. It's good advice. He passed it on to others. Hey, in any circumstance, in any location, in any time period, verse 5 you cannot do without. Commit thy way to the Lord. Don't threat, trust. Don't threat, trust. Don't be worried, don't be anxious, trust. J.R. Ferenc, or Lord J.R. Ferenc, he established the Odeon chain of cinemas. He founded Pinewood Studios, where many a movie has been made. But he was a devout Methodist, and his beliefs greatly influenced all aspects of his life. I think he would have enjoyed this psalm, and I think he would have got on well with David, because Lord J. Arthur Rank refused to worry except on Wednesdays. He had a special little box on his desk. And whenever a problem came that would cause worry or anxiety, he wrote it on a bit of paper, folded it up and put it in his worry box. And he would forget all about it until Wednesday. And then on Wednesday, he would open the contents of his box and look at it. And this is what he says. He discovered that most of the things that disturbed him the past 6 days had already been settled. It would have been useless for him to have worried about them. He'd committed them. He was resting, and it came to pass. The word commit here in verse 5 literally means to roll down, and there's a word picture behind it. It's the idea of a camel who's come through a long, hard journey, and on its back is a big, heavy load. And when it reaches the destination, it kneels down and it leans to one side, and all the cargo he's been carrying just rolls off, and the camel can stand up and he's free of his load. And that's the idea here behind this word commit. Roll off your burden to God. Why are you carrying it when you can give it to another? And that's what the psalmist says. Don't threat. Don't worry. Don't be anxious. Roll it onto him. And he gives us those four pieces of advice. Trust, delight, commit, and rest. So that's the first section. Section 2. I'll use the right control. The Lord understands your situation. Verses 12 to 20. Since God can be trusted, we should not fret. Since God understands our situation, we should not fear. Look at verse 12. The wicked plot against the righteous and gnash their teeth at them. But the Lord laughs at the wicked, for he knows their day is coming. The wicked draw the sword and bend the bow to bring down the poor and needy, to slay those whose ways are upright. But their swords will pierce like their own hearts, and their bows will be broken. Better the little that the righteous have than the wealth of many wicked. For the power of the wicked will be broken, but the Lord upholds the righteous. The blameless spend their days under the Lord's care, and their inheritance will endure forever. In times of disaster, they will not wither. In days of famine, they will enjoy plenty. But the wicked will perish. Though the Lord's enemies are like the flowers of the field, they will be consumed. They will go up in smoke. Since God can be trusted, we should not fret. And now he says, because God understands our situation, we should not fear. In the 17th century, there was a man called Paul Gerhardt. And he and his family were forced to leave their home in Berlin because of religious persecution, because they were Christians. and Protestant Christians, they were forced to flee and went towards East Germany for safety. They fled, they left all their possessions, all their belonging, just him, his wife and their children, like a number of families, forced to flee. On the night they fled, they stopped at an inn, and poor Gerhard read Psalm 37 to his family. You can imagine when he came across verse 16, what he must have thought. Better a little that the righteous have than the wealth of many wicked. He'd left all his wealth. They had nothing, only the clothes they stood up in. Verse 17, an encouragement to them. The Lord takes care of the godly. They will survive through hard times. Well, the very next day, he sat under a tree and he wrote a hymn. And that hymn is about trusting God in hard times. That same evening, two messengers came and they brought food. They brought money. And they said to him, if you come with us to Merseburg, you will find safety and you can pastor a church there. And he followed them. And the hymn he wrote, thanks to John Newton, has been translated into English. You won't find it in Mission Praise, I'm afraid. It is in Sankey's. If you've still got a copy, you can blow the dust off when you get home. And it's number 561 in Sankey's. And it's a hymn called Give to the Winds Your Fears. Give to the Winds Your Fears. In Germany, it was the second most popular hymn after Martin Luther's A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. But one of the verses says this: through waves and clouds and storms, his power will clear your way. Wait for his time. The darkest night shall end in brightest day. And that's what the psalmist is saying here. If God understands your situation, don't fear. Verse 12 says, the wicked may be busy plotting against the poor and the needy. But look at God's reaction in verse 13. He's not worried. He laughs at the wicked because he knows judgment is coming. Notice there is no panic in heaven. God has no problems, only plans. We have problems. God doesn't. He only has plans. And there's a contrast in these verses between two groups, the righteous and the wicked. Verse 20, the wicked will perish like smoke at the altar. Yes, they make a sight to be seen at the moment, just like smoke rises. Everyone notices it, but 2 days later it will be gone and forgotten. But the righteous, verse 18, the blameless spend their days under the Lord's care. God watches, he cares for us in this life. And verse 18 reminds us that this life might be short and temporary, but for the believer, our reward is long and glorious. Their inheritance will endure forever. We're not like a puff of smoke that goes up into the air, catches people's attention and disappears. Our inheritance is forever. So stick in there. Or as Corrie ten Boom said, if you look at the world, you'll be distressed. They're prospering, but they're wicked. I'm righteous and I'm struggling. What's going on? You'll get worried, anxious, you'll fret. If you look within, you'll be depressed. But if you look at God, you'll be at rest. And then the third section. The Lord blesses his people. The Lord blesses his people. I read a story about a lady in an airport who popped into the local shop. She got herself a packet of biscuits. She put them in her hand luggage and she went and booked in for her flight. She grabbed herself a cup of coffee in the cafe, sat down in the reception area, started to read a magazine to sip her coffee. She then reached to the table, picked up one of her biscuits and started to eat. But as she pulled a biscuit out of the packet, the man opposite her also reached into the packet of biscuits and helped himself to a biscuit. Now, she didn't want a confrontation, but she was thinking to herself, what a cheek. How dare he? My biscuits! So she thought, I'll let it pass, keep calm, it's not that important, it's only a biscuit. So for a second time, she reached in and pulled out a biscuit. And to her amazement, the chap also reached over, pulled out a biscuit and started to munch it. Now, she was fuming. A cheapskate. My biscuits, what's going on? So for a third time, she went to reach for a biscuit, pulled one out, started to munch it. The chap did the same. Is it worth a confrontation? She sat there, steam was almost coming out of her ears. And then she went to get the next biscuit, and there was only one left in the packet. Before she could pick it up, the man picked it up, broke it in half, gave her half, and he popped it into his mouth. He then stood up, put his newspaper in his arm, and walked off. Well, the woman was furious. She rolled up a magazine, she opened her hand luggage, and just as she put the magazine in, she noticed her packet of biscuits. You ever make silly mistakes like that? I like that story because it kind of reminds me of how we treat God so often. Even when we're not treating him well, he still returns kindness to us again and again and again. And in this section, David reminds us of how God blesses his people. Look at verse 21. The wicked borrow and do not repay, but the righteous give generously. Those the Lord blesses will inherit the land, but those he curses will be destroyed. The Lord makes firm the steps of the one who delights in him. Though he may stumble, he will not fall, for the Lord upholds him with his hand. I was young, and now I am old, yet I have never seen the righteous forsaken, or their children begging bread. They are always generous and lend freely. Their children will be a blessing. Turn from evil and do good. Then you will dwell in the land forever. For the Lord loves the just and will not forsake his faithful ones. Wrongdoers will be completely destroyed. The offspring of the wicked will perish. The righteous will inherit the land and dwell in it forever. The mouths of the righteous utter wisdom, and their tongues speak what is just. The law of their God is in their hearts. Their feet do not slip. Now in this section, verses 21 to 31, David reminds us how God blesses his people. And his blessing may come to us in a variety of guises and ways, but he blesses us. Most of us know about George Muller, the great Bible teacher, evangelist, in our type of churches, what we might call one of the original founders of Brethren type churches. He was the director of Ashleydown Orphanage in Bristol in England, and during that time he cared for 10,024 orphans. He also provided an education often for many other orphans. He opened 117 different schools. 120,000 pupils went through those schools. Not once did George Muller ever make a public plea for money. 10,024 orphans housed and homed and clothed and fed. 120,000 children educated in 117 different schools. And many of us have read his biography. We know the stories of how on occasion they would have the orphans in the dining hall with no food to feed them. And Muller would give thanks. Of course, we're not told how long he prayed for. He could have been there for hours, couldn't he? I'm sure he wasn't. Muller would give thanks. And at the end of saying amen, there would be a knock at the door. And there would be food on the doorstep. And there are so many answers to prayer like that. But George Muller likes Psalm 37. And in his Bible, he added two words to verse 23. Now it should read, the steps of a godly man are ordered by the Lord. But George Muller added two words. The steps, and here they are, and stops. The steps and stops of a godly man are ordered by the Lord. Now hold on, when you hear about George Muller, surely he didn't have any stops. Surely he didn't have any closed doors. I mean, the guy only had to smile and the sin come out. That's the sort of spiritual giant he was. Well, that's what the biographies might tell us, but Muller knew what it was to struggle. He knew what it was to wrestle in prayer. He knew what it was to wait upon the Lord. And he knew what it was when God said, sorry, that's not my will. You don't go there. And he had the wisdom in his own Bible to write those words. The steps and the stops of a good man are ordered by the Lord. That word ordered literally means made firm, secure, established. It's the idea of this. that at times every one of us stumble. We all fall. But God never leaves us flat on our face. He picks us up, he dusts us off, and he sets us off again. That's the idea behind that word ordered. God watches over us, and when we fall and fail, he picks us up. And there are two things worth noting in this section. Verse 21 and 22, that refers to God's provision. Those the Lord blesses will inherit the land. God gives us what we need. He provides for us. Verse 23 to 24 refer to God's protection. The Lord makes firm his step. The Lord upholds him with his hand. And then verse 25 to 26, that refers to God's presence. I have never seen the righteous forsaken or their children breaking bread. So you've got God provided, he is faithful. God protected, he's helpful and forgiving. And God is ever present, even in the tough times. Remember years ago being on the Isle of Wight for a week's convention, and I was looking after the county stand in the missionary section of Keswick on the Isle of Wight. So they had a huge marquee, and myself and other organisations were on stands promoting the work of the groups we're with. And we got to go to the Bible readings, and in one year Peter Cottrell was the speaker. Now Peter Cottrell was head of London Bible College for many years, but before that he was a missionary in Ethiopia. And he was in Ethiopia during one of the most severe famines. And I remember him reading this psalm and quoting verse 25. And after he read these words, in all my years, I have never seen the Lord forsake a man who loves him, nor have I seen the children of the godly go hungry. He just stopped and he said, I have. I've seen it again and again and again. And again, and again. And then he went on to explain. This verse is not a promise for every believer in every place that you can hold on to. Even today in refugee camps, in certain parts of the world, people will have died of hunger who have faith in the Lord. This verse is the testimony of one man, David. And for him, these words are 100% true. He never saw anyone die of hunger or godly people's children begging for food. That was his experience, his testimony. But our testimony might be different. You remember I said at the start that this reads a bit like the book of Proverbs. It's a whole series of unconnected sayings. It's a teaching psalm rather than a poem or a hymn. And it's hard to outline because of that. And like the book of Proverbs, it gives generalizations, not necessarily specific facts for everyone. Let me explain. We all know Proverbs 22 verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now that's not a guarantee. It's a general statement that if you train up a child in the ways of the Lord, 9 out of 10 will come back to the Lord at the end of their life. But it doesn't mean everyone will. It's a general fact. It's a general statement. It won't be true for everyone, but usually it will prove true most of the time. And therefore you apply the principle to your life. And that's true for that verse. For David, he could say, I've never seen any of Lord's children die of hunger, but if you look on the news, you might. In Syria today, in the Ukraine. Let's look at the last section. The Lord judges the wicked. Verse 32 to 40. The Lord judges the wicked. The wicked lie in wait for the righteous, intent on putting them to death. But the Lord will not leave them in the power of the wicked, or let them be condemned when brought to trial. Hope in the Lord and keep his way. He will exalt you to inherit the land. When the wicked are destroyed, you will see it. I have seen a wicked man and ruthless man flourishing like a luxuriant native tree. But he soon passed away and was no more. Though I looked for him, he could not be found. Consider the blameless, observe the upright. A future awaits those who seek peace. But all sinners will be destroyed. There will be no future for the wicked. The salvation of the righteous comes from the Lord. He is their stronghold in time of trouble. The Lord helps them and delivers them. He delivers them from the wicked and saves them because they take refuge in him. A farmer who was an atheist knew that the editor of a local newspaper was a Christian. And to wind him up, he wrote him a letter. And in his letter to this Christian editor, he said this: "In defiance of your God, I ploughed my fields this year on a Sunday. I dissed and fertilised them on Sunday. I planted them on a Sunday. I cultivated them on Sunday and I reaped them on Sunday. This October I had the biggest crop I have ever had. How do you explain that?" And the Christian editor simply replied, "God does not always settle his accounts in October." And that's what David is saying in this verse. God will judge those who reject him and those who are rebellious towards him. And as we finish, there are three word pictures in this last section. Two negative, one positive. The first negative, verse 32 to 34. He has in view a court of law. Look at verse 33. Note the words: "They will be brought to trial." In other words, there's a day of judgment, a day of reckoning coming when they will stand before the Lord in his court. So a court of law is pictured in verse 32 to 34. "Evil men may seem to win the battle, but God will always win the war." The second negative image, verse 35 and 36, a flourishing tree. Luxuriant. But this tree's glory has long faded. It has withered, it has died, and even worse, there is no trace at all it ever existed. And then it finishes, verse 37 to 40, with a positive picture. A rescue taking place. Did you hear those rescue terms in that last verse? The salvation of the righteous comes from the Lord. Here's their stronghold when in times of trouble. The Lord helps them. He delivers them. He delivers them from the wicked and saves them because they take refuge in him. So you have a positive picture of a rescue taking place. So in conclusion, in a topsy-turvy world, when everything can seem upside down, the psalmist says, don't fret, don't get anxious, don't get worried. Leave the worrying to God. Commit your way to God, roll everything on him, do your duty and enjoy your blessings. Do your duty and enjoy your blessings. And don't forget those key words: trust, delight, commit, and rest. Martin Luther summarized this psalm this way: learn patience, cast your cares on the Lord, do not be angry, wish no ill on the wicked, leave management and government of all to God. Let's pray.